This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. International borders remain closed as the fight against the pandemic continues, but the flow of money has never stopped. And in fact, has been made easier and cheaper with the rise of remittance services. However, there are many new players using this technology to disrupt what was previously a market dominated by banks and a few established players. So today we speak to one of these disruptors and also the newest entrant to the Malaysian market, WorldRemit, represented by their country head for Malaysia and head of ASEAN business, Ridzwan Aziz. Thanks for joining us today. Now, I want to start by asking you, why do you want to join the Malaysian market now? It's crowded. There are at least 13 licensed players.
I think that's a very interesting question. Actually, WorldRemit has been in Malaysia market since 2017 when we participated with the regulatory sandbox under Bank Negara. And we have had quite an interesting statistic about the development of the market. And despite COVID, we still continue and pursue for the license to be obtained. And we did that in February this year. And the numbers and the facts actually are supporting our entrance to the market. So Malaysia is definitely attractive. And here we are starting and launching our business.
And you say the numbers support your business. Is this due to the fact that, at least 15% of the Malaysian workforce are migrant workers? Is that what you're trying to corner? But are you too late in the game, though, then?
Not really, because the 15% of the migrant workers is definitely the focus of many, including us. But the professional Malaysian with family abroad, and the element of an inability of many people to move and because of the lockdown, that actually compel a lot of them to look for a digital alternative in terms of sending money. So those actually are really interesting in terms of how it supports our theory and our experiment since 2017. And this actually is something that we believe that will help us in terms of running the business in Malaysia.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, WorldRemit is going to be consumer-customer focused. And I mean, this is also tied to the type of license that was issued by Bank Negara Malaysia. So it's Class B for remittance only. But do you think this is too narrow a scope? Isn't the business-to-business the lucrative segment here?
That's an interesting point. But what we are focusing at is being the best in what we are able to do. When we started the business in the UK about 10 years ago, it was started by our founder, Ismail Ahmad. He believed that the retail segment is still really underserved, and this actually stayed true until today. So it is not just about being the best in what we do. We also understand that there's more upside in terms of this segment. And we believe there's more to explore. Whether it's organic development or inorganic development that we can actually focus on, but staying true to the retail segment for us to then scale further going forward.
But I would imagine in Malaysia, a lot of your potential customers are going to be migrant workers sending their hard-earned money. And I would say they're probably quite price sensitive. So I want to know, what kind of model are you going to approach? I mean, so fees and exchange rates count. Are you planning to be the cheapest in the industry to gain market share?
Our focus is definitely giving fast, secure, effective and trustworthy service in digital remit. So price-wise, in terms of fee, we definitely are going to be competitive compared to other digital remittance providers, not necessarily with the incumbent or the banks. And based on what we have experienced so far, we are always better in terms of exchange rate compared to the banks as well as the incumbent. And for transfer fee, this is something that really are very flexible for the digital remittance specifically, because being a digital players allow us to have lower OPEX, and definitely something that we can rely on in terms of making sure that we remain competitive when we offer our service. We know that for a fact that Bank Negara is trying to lower down the transfer fee below 3% of the value being sent. And definitely, we are always around that number in terms of our transfer fee. And hence, definitely, we are competitive compared to others, especially banks. And
you mentioned fees, right? Because I looked at the 2021 World Bank report, and they say global fees on average is 6.3%. So how much cheaper are you? You mentioned Bank Negara wants 3%. What is your range, though?
If you talk about Malaysia market, we definitely are very close to that. And just to let you know that transfer fee is, the fee itself is not the big chunk in terms of how we earn our revenue. Revenue actually comes a lot more from the volume and also the treasury of the FX that we manage. So that's where we actually get the margin. And because remittance is something that is of a necessity, especially to the 15% migrant workers, we always have that demand for them to be able to use. So competition-wise, in terms of attractiveness, we are always there. Not necessarily the cheapest, but always something else that people look at in terms of fast, secure, trustworthy, as well as effective.
And is this managed on a global scale? Because you say it's down to volume and also your treasury operations. So is that handled out of London? Is that how is well, you should look at the company as a global operations then?
Yes. As a global company, we manage around 7,800 payment rail on a day. As far as pricing is concerned, it's really a lot in terms of pricing point. Last check is more than about 100,000 pricing point that we need to look at. There's a lot of technology that we use in terms of making sure we are optimizing various aspects for us to be able to provide the best services to our customer. We know that customers are very sensitive to our price, and this is where we combine price with reliability, because we can actually send money within minutes and complete that transaction within minutes. And that's really unheard of if, let's say, you are using bank or using the...
Banks, perhaps a separate discussion, but let's say you're the big players. So the likes of Western Union, MoneyGram, TransferWise, PayPal, don't they also have scale? Don't they have processes which are, you know, technically superior? Can't they send money as fast as you? Aren't they your real competition? Because they're also global players.
Yes. I mean, I'm not discounting that others have more or less certain advantages. And this is where we do not want to simply become the cheapest just because others are offering. Because sustainability of services, quality of services, reliability in terms of how secure and fast our services is. And this is where it's really something that we are aware of. And if you look at it, in the bigger remittance industry per se, you can see that only a handful of the digital players are able to do what we are doing now. And if you really focus on the 100% pure digital remittance company, company that you mentioned just now, especially those that has legacy system would have a problem in terms of coming up to the level of efficiency that we have. We do not have any problem with that. We are always actually improving the remittance system because the remittance system that we use is proprietary. We develop it ourselves. And we have capabilities globally in terms of managing those key aspects where we have offices in the US, in Europe, as well as in Asia for us to be able to operate effectively 24 hours.
Okay, I know that WorldRemit sends money to 146 countries, but in Malaysia, I would gather that the largest markets here in terms of destination for money to be sent is probably Indonesia, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Philippines, easily the top. Now, but WorldRemit is also a brand. Looking at your founder, the history of it, is a brand more associated with Africa. So how much traction can you expect here? Because I would assume if I am a worker trying to send money to Philippines, I would want a brand that I am familiar with. So is this going to be a huge challenge for WorldRemit though?
I don't think so. What we have noticed based on the sandbox that we have experienced back in 2017-2018, the Philippines market is definitely the top sand receiving country. And India as well, and China as well, is the top. And we do have a large followers sending money to the African continent as well. So we think that it's not about the brand or the origination of the brand, but remittance is about how trustworthy, how effective, and how sustainable the services that you're going to be able to provide. So being the cheapest has its own advantage, but we are not using just that in terms of getting the actually trust from the foreign workers or the professional or the expat. Other aspects like regulation, our compliance and reliability also play a part.
On The Breakfast Grill this morning, we are speaking to Ridzwan Aziz, Country Director for Malaysia and Head of ASEAN Business for World Remit. When we come back, has COVID changed the business model of remittance? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Ridzwan Aziz, Country Director for Malaysia and Head of ASEAN Business World Remit. Before the break, we were discussing how the newest remittance company in Malaysia plans to gain traction in a crowded market. Now, I don't need to remind you, unfortunately, that we're still living in a pandemic world. So I want to know, how has that impacted the business of remittance? Because migrant workers were probably the first to be hit with the economic downturn that we are facing, and some might have even been sent home. So I just want to know, what are industry volumes like in Malaysia? Actually, have we seen a decline?
Because we just started in Malaysia, we do not really have the numbers in terms of what are the... When COVID started back in March last year, we were not in operation. But since February when we started and looking at what we have now, we have actually a very good progressive pattern in terms of the number of people who sign up, the number of people who are activating their account, and the number of transactions that's going on a daily basis. The trajectory is positive and trending up. And I think COVID definitely has an impact to overseas foreign workers, the professional, because at large, the industry is affected. But the need for them to send money is still there. They are still sending money. And a lot of the customers are shifting from the traditional way of sending money, where they have to go to the kiosk or the counters, and now moving towards apps and web.
You're a fully digital model for pay-in. Do you think that actually works against you? Because for certain segments of the market, I can imagine, cash is still king. They still want to go to a kiosk. They still want to hand over their cash. Not everybody has a smartphone or knows how to use a smartphone or has web applications, for example.
So for those segments, okay, I think that is true. Not everybody has a smartphone. So in order to overcome that issue, what we have done is, instead of going to every individual, we go to employer of the employers. Because imagine if, let's say, you own a plantation somewhere remote in Sabah or anywhere, you definitely do not want your employee to travel 2 hours going out just to get to the nearest bank or to the nearest traditional remittance company for them to do the remittance and then come back. So instead of doing that, rather than going to each employees, we'll talk to the employer and say, wouldn't it be good if, let's say, we can help you and make sure that all your employees first in sending money back home is all done at a place that is secure, and then you don't have to run the risk of spending time outside of the workplace and then run the risk of whatever that could happen during their journey going to the bank or the traditional remittance company. And this actually would be welcomed by many employers, because it is actually going to improve the productivity, because employees doesn't have to worry about sending money back home safely, and every single one of them will be able to do it And the only thing that the employer needs to do is just to have one laptop ready for everybody to be able to log in and send money. So that's one of the ways where we can actually overcome those where we classify as the unreachable and without the smartphone.
So how much of this underserved segment have you grown? I mean, it clearly involves conversations with employers. How many have actually said, yes, this looks like a good idea, sign me up?
Okay, we've started this conversation, but at this point of time, I'm not actually at the liberty to share with you about those who actually have, and it's still in progress. Later, once we have this, definitely I'll share it.
And I want to discuss the payout options, because on your website, you have multiple. Some, but I would see some are more challenging, like cash pickup or even door-to-door delivery because of lockdowns. So how are people receiving the money?
Receiving money is very interesting because it depends on the location of where actually the money is being sent. If in Philippines, we saw a trend now where a lot of them resort to bank transfer, where they pick it up from the banks, as well as into e-wallets. As well as when you send to Africa, we also have partners that even can send money via mobile services. One of our partners in Africa is actually able to connect with all the small shop houses, kedai runcit, equivalent in Malaysia. And this is where it helps a lot of the families at the remote area in the African continent to actually pick up their money. And in certain other countries, they use their national postal services to pick up their money. And that's why at the payout options, it depends on the country, but largely we are very flexible depending on the country where the money is going to be received. And we definitely analyze what's the best option our customer has.
And maybe you can help me also understand, why does the cost of using a remittance service fluctuate so much even during a short period of time? Because again, I use this May 2021 World Bank report that compiles this data. So in there, they use the example of sending US$200 from Malaysia to Nepal. And for the week of April the 6th to 10th, the cost was 4.6%. Then from May 4th to 8th, it was 3.5%. And then finally, May 18th to 22nd, it was 3.05%. I mean, that's actually quite a wide swing. And, you know, can you help us understand this? Because we would, ideally, the worker would want to have as low a fee as possible.
Yes. Lower fee and consistency in the fee. Okay, this is where for remittance, the transfer fee actually is not the biggest element. The biggest element actually is the FX management. So depending on which payment rail in terms of the conversion of the currency, is it, are you sending ringgit to taka or ringgit to rupee? That actually have a large impact in terms of that fluctuation that you mentioned. So we also need to look at the strength of the sending currency, in this case Malaysia ringgit, against whatever currency that is going to be received by whenever a sender sends money. So this is where we actively manage that internally to make sure that we can give a competitive rate to our customers. So the transfer fee is really not the biggest concern, but more about the FX management and making sure that we can give the best competitive rate to our customers. So the swing is not really within our control because it is up to the FX swing out there.
But you then try to make a fixed margin though, depending on the swing?
We definitely try.
Can you give us a range? What is that fixed margin range?
I that's really not my expertise because that's really up to our treasury desk in terms of how they manage.
What about the compliance and regulatory environment? I think that's clearly key, right? So we're not just talking about Bank Negara Malaysia, but other central banks or other government regulatory agencies. One key component of that is the Know Your Client rules. And I think for you, since you're 100% digital application, how does the electronic KYC work then?
So just to start off, the approval that Bank Negara gives is not just about the approval to start a business, but also approval to apply and implement the EKYC framework as part of our compliance regime. So Bank Negara specifically review the end-to-end capabilities of our EKYC process, and they give a separate approval for any digital remittance in terms of deploying EKYC. That's the background of how we can apply EKYC in Malaysia. Secondly, for onboarding, transaction supervision, reporting internally, and escalating any issue, definitely we have a combination of machine and human looking at it. We have actually pre and post review, and not just compliance looking at it, our customer support also lend their hand in terms of looking and reviewing any suspicious transaction. And then even after the transaction has been completed, we definitely have another team that's looking at fraud review, identifying certain pattern that is suspicious, and then that will be escalated to our compliance, and then eventually come to the business side for us to be aware of. And we definitely have linked directly to the regulators in terms of anything that we suspect be what we call suspicious transaction under the Anti-Money Laundering Act.
How robust are your internal systems to prevent hacking, for example? I mean, it's become quite common. Even cryptocurrency platforms have been victims of this. So what kind of systems do you have in place?
In financial services, there's two type of, generally two type of financial services. One is what we call transaction through money, and then the other one is money through technology through money. The other one is money through technology. What we do is we intermediate or become an intermediary from person A to send money to person B. So we do not actually hold any money. The faster the money is being sent, the better it is, because there's less chance for any hacker or anything to go wrong while the money is being transferred by us. The other one is where, if you talk about, say, cryptocurrency just now, the risk is when they trade a cryptocurrency, it depends on where the money is being kept, whether it's the digital asset or whether it's the fiat currency. And most of the time, the hackers go to the digital asset exchange because they also hold the wallet of the traders. So hackers will hack the digital asset exchange to get to the wallet because that's where the money is. But for us, the money is not with us. So hacking our system, they would only see data of transaction from person A to person B, from country A to country. So even if they try to hack us, they would probably not get the money that's being transferred, because the money actually being transferred from a bank account to another bank account, as an example.
Yeah, but how robust are your systems? Because ultimately, you don't want anybody to hack your systems.
Precisely. So this is where we definitely have internal capabilities looking at real-time threats to our system. We also work together with our cloud services providers in terms of making sure that the network is also secure. Anything peculiar to the pattern of the transaction, we definitely will flag it. And this is all being looked at on a real time.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Ridzwan Aziz, Country Director for Malaysia and Head of ASEAN Business World Remit. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.